Thank you, Matt and the team. Thank you, Sophia, for the prayers. My name's Chris, part of the church here, and every now and again get the opportunity to speak and give Matt a week off. And the theme today is going to be about faithfulness. It's come through in the songs. It's come through in the prayers. It's central to our faith as Christians, isn't it? I don't know, have you ever had that experience when you've been just about to leave the house and you go to grab the keys and they're not there? They're not where they should be. So you start thinking, well, where else do I keep them normally? You look in maybe bedroom, on the table in the lounge, can't find them. Then you start thinking, well, when did I use them last? What was I wearing? Check the pockets. And you go through your coats and your wardrobe, still can't find them. And this is important because you need to be somewhere. There's somewhere you need to be, and you can't find your keys. And then eventually you start looking, once you've double-checked all the places that you've checked once already, you start looking in the places they should never be, like the fridge. I don't know. Anybody got any examples of where they found their keys? Where they shouldn't be, yeah?
In the recycling.
The recycling, brilliant. Brilliant, yeah. And so easily to have just dropped them in there. Yeah. Well, faith can be a bit like that. At the moment when you really need them, when you really need your faith, when things are tough, you can't find it sometimes. And it's not there. And that feeling is quite an unpleasant feeling. There's a little poem here about this subject. It's called, "Now, Where Did I Put My Faith?" Where did I put my faith? I had it the other day when the sun was shining and all was bright. My faith, it shined like a special light. But where it is now, I just can't tell. Where did I put my faith? When was the last time I used it? Last week? Last month? Last year? I know it was strong when I was younger. I used to have such a spiritual hunger. But now I'm not so bold any longer. Where did I put my faith? I had it on Sunday in church. Came easy, no need to search. We were worshiping God with songs of praise. My heart's desire was to follow his ways. But I wish I could find it on normal weekdays. Oh, where did I put my faith?
Our reading is taken from the book of Luke, chapter 8, starting at verse 22, and also includes people who seem to have misplaced their faith. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake, so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him."
Thank you, Dot. It's a familiar story, isn't it? And one that includes that question from Jesus. Guys, where is your faith? The context of this story in the big picture of the ministry of Jesus, those 3 years that he spent with his disciples before his death and resurrection, this was probably in the earlier part of that 3 years rather than the later part. But certainly his disciples had had enough experience of Jesus' teaching, and they'd seen some wonderful miracles, that their faith was certainly developing and growing over this time. But we can't be sure, can we, how their faith was, what state their faith was in. There was probably a mix of people. We're talking about the disciples. Well, we know about the 12 disciples, don't we, that they're named in the Bible. But there was also a group of women who would travel with Jesus as he moved around. So there was probably a larger group of people, a mix of people, different types of people. We know something about the background of some of the disciples, and they came from different experiences. And perhaps they had different understandings of who Jesus was, even at this time, as they were working alongside him. And perhaps it's not unlike us as we gather here today, a large group of people with different experiences, some fairly new into this journey of faith, some even exploring whether this is the right thing for them or not, some perhaps who've traveled this journey some time but are still learning what it is to have faith in Jesus. And then we get the boat. So everyone getting into a boat is one of those things, isn't it, that moves you from individual experience to a community experience. We have that expression, don't we? We're all in the same boat. So quite literally, they were all in the same boat. And they were going to have an experience together crossing from one side of Galilee, Lake Galilee, to the other. Quite a big lake. And amongst them, there were at least four, amongst the disciples, there were at least four experienced fishermen, people who were used to this lake, who knew it well. They were sailors. They used to go out a lot. Do we have any sailors amongst us today? Anybody into sailing at all? I mean, we are living in the middle of the country. Okay, I appreciate that. The sea is a long way away. Oh, yes, but we do. We do. Jonathan does. Where do you sail?
Norfolk, Bromsgrove, the River Avon at Chipsbury, when it's not flooded.
Excellent. Well, when it is flooded, it's even more places you can go. Okay, so we have a sailor amongst us, that's good. And of course we have Jesus in the boat as well, don't we? We have Jesus in the boat. I thought it'd be useful to actually create a boat this morning. So I'm going to ask you to help me here. There are some spare chairs here, I noticed. So if we could make a boat shape, use these chairs.
We'll, facing which way?
Yeah, we'll get these chairs to face that way, okay. And use the front row as the other side of the boat. Alison, Margaret, you're in the boat. Brilliant. But I do need some more people to come and join in the boat here. Nothing terrible is going to happen to you if you do, but I'd appreciate some volunteers to come and sit in the boat. If you're sitting near the front, do come and join us. Yeah. Come on, there must be more. Come on, guys. You know you want to do it. Jonathan, it would be very helpful to have an experienced sailor in the boat.
I will steer the boat.
Excellent. Yeah, would you have a way? No, we need some people on this side as well, so that's fine.
Which way is the wind coming from?
Well, you should, you know, the finger in the air. That's it. That's the one, yeah. So we've got this shared experience. So, anybody else want to join? Okay. Yeah, come on, Angie.
Sorry, we're only licensed to run.
Excellent. And we need a Jesus in the boat. Is it Sam? Yeah, Sam. Would you mind being Jesus? Because you've got the look of Jesus. You've got the beard.
That's very stereotypical.
I know, but he's got a white t-shirt on as well. Would you mind? You just maybe go at the end here, and you're asleep. So it's an easy job. If you could just fall asleep. Anybody else who falls asleep, that's not allowed. But Sam is playing Jesus and is allowed to fall asleep during my talk. Thank you. Yes. What was that? Ready about?
The wind's over there now.
Oh, okay, right. Okay. I can see we've got a very active participant. That's excellent. That's excellent. I did ask for it, didn't I? What I wanted to say about the boat particularly was that although, as I said, all these people have got their own experiences of Jesus and where they are in that journey, they come together, they're in this boat together, they've got this communal experience, this experience. It's a bit like our church, isn't it? It's a bit like being part of a church, in that we experience things together when we're in church. For example, I mean, we just celebrated, didn't we, 10 years since the new building was put up. So the people who were there during that experience, they traveled that journey together that time ago. And now, where the church is now, and a lot of us have joined since then, you know, we're going through an experience now of the church changing and developing in different ways. And we're in this boat together. We're sharing this experience. And we have to put up with some very strange characters. Now, we have a storm coming. I am told, according to the notes in my... Yeah, that's nice. You're settling down very well. Excellent. We have a storm coming, and Lake Galilee is susceptible to storms, sudden storms, I am told. Yeah. Well, what I'd like us to do is develop a bit more atmosphere. So if you're not in the boat, could you be the wind? Could you make the noise of the wind? Let's get some wind going around. And if you're in this section particularly, could you start waving your arms around? Let's get some... Okay. Okay, anybody feeling a bit nauseous? Yes? Yeah. Well, hang on, Jesus, hang on. We haven't got to that yet. The big question is, what do you do in this situation? Because here we are in the storm. And, you know, I'm not going to apologize for making the obvious connection about the storm and the storms of life that we all experience. You know, we all go through things, don't we? Sophia's prayers covered a lot of ground around the type of storms that we experience in life. You know, there are things like health, finances, relationships, and so on that disturb us, our equilibrium. Alison was talking about here we are at the beginning of 2024, we look back at 23, and it's been a mix of good and bad stuff for most of us. We look forward to 24, and we hope and we pray for good things, don't we? But we know that there will be storms during 2024, and sometimes they can come out of nowhere and hit us. And maybe you're in the middle of a storm right now. I think a lot of people will be. And these storms are coming. And what do we do in that situation? That's the big question. So let's get this storm going again, please. That's it. What do the disciples do? They panic. Exactly. They rush to Jesus. They rush to Jesus and wake him up. We're going to drown, they say. And Jesus does two things. First of all, he calms the storm. Excellent. And secondly, he asks the question, where is your faith? Yeah. Brilliant. Great job. Thank you, Sam. So, those two things, calming the storm, first of all, let's just remember and recognize and acknowledge God is in control. He has power over these situations. The reason these disciples are frightened is because we would all be, wouldn't we, in that situation. We don't have any control over the wind and the waves, but God does. To be in relationship with someone who has control over all things is a wonderful blessing for us, isn't it? It's a wonderful thing for us to have that knowledge that the God of all creation, the God of over all things, is all powerful. And in this situation, he calms the storm. Now, that doesn't happen in every situation, does it? If every storm we ever experienced, we just called out to Jesus and everything went calm, that would be a very different experience to what our life is like. Many of our storms rumble on. Many of our storms don't end the way that we would want them to. The biggest storm in my life really took place about 18 years ago when I was very unwell. And I had a problem in my chest which turned out to be a cancer. But that process of working out what that was and then the treatment of it and then the subsequent follow-ons from that, the consequences of it health-wise, that took a period of 4 years. Did it take me 4 years to wait to cry out to God? No, I was crying out to God very, very early in the process. But the storm took its course. But Jesus was in control. Let me read something to you from something I wrote at the time, which is actually called Weathering the Storm. This was fairly early on in that process. The news that the results of the biopsy were inconclusive was obviously a disappointment because it meant more weeks of coughing, breathlessness, and lack of sleep. And at this point, I was frequently coughing to the point of being sick. It was obvious I was getting worse, and the prospect of any treatment remained some distance away. Until a clear diagnosis could be found, there was nothing they could do. Despite the situation, we remained calm. Fiona, my wife, had been saying on the previous Sunday how much she felt at peace. For us, knowing God is in control is the only source of such a feeling. It doesn't mean that we expect him to put everything right or rearrange the natural order of things simply to suit us. But we know that someone with such power is watching over us. It's a difficult concept to explain when you try and put it into words. Maybe it's like watching a film where you know that everything will work out all right in the end, even though you can't see the trouble ahead. But when I say work out all right, I don't mean that I think I know the ending or even what all right means. I simply trust the judgment of the one who's doing the directing. So Jesus is in control. God is in control. That's the first thing we must take from this story. But then the second one is this. Once he'd calmed the storm, Jesus asks a question. Guys, where is your faith? Now, I don't know about you, how you read that. We only have the Bible words there, don't we? We don't have the tone that it was said in or the body language that accompanied it. So we're left to speculate a bit as to exactly what that question means. Jesus had a wonderful way in his interaction with people of asking questions in situations and putting the onus on the person themselves to think about things. You could interpret this as Jesus, guys, where is your faith? You know, that he was cross, that he was disappointed in them, that he was angry with them. They'd let him down. They'd let themselves down. You could interpret it that way. But I'd like to suggest a different interpretation, really, and that's this, that Jesus was actually opening up the opportunity for them to think in this situation, in this scenario, how does my faith play out in these sort of situations? How should I have behaved here? If my faith had been stronger, what might have been different? He was giving them that opportunity to just reflect back on what the situation had arisen. How should faith work in these situations? Now, when I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that, hang on, I'm sure the word rebuke comes into the story somewhere. Doesn't Jesus rebuke his disciples for lack of faith? So I look back. And there are three accounts of this story in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in each one, the word rebuke does appear. And in each one, Jesus rebukes the wind and the waves. He doesn't rebuke his disciples. He rebukes what is wrong with this world. He rebukes those things that cause the distress and the upset and the pain. Jesus is against those things. He does not rebuke his disciples for lack of faith. But he does ask them, guys, where is your faith? What does faith mean to you in these situations? What can you learn from this? Were the disciples wrong to wake Jesus up? No, I don't think so. I think that's a natural thing for us to go to God in these situations. I think that's a good thing. That when we're in the storms of life, that we reach out to Jesus and we pray. We reach out to God. Could they have come with a different message? We're going to drown. Imagine they'd said, Jesus, we're in a difficult situation here. We're frightened, but we trust that you will get us through this. We trust that you are all powerful. And then waited to see what Jesus would do. Wouldn't that be a different story? Wouldn't that be a powerful story of faith? So what? As we come into 2024, let's think about what our desire is for this year, what our hopes are for our faith, and think about this question. Perhaps imagine Jesus asking this question of you, where is your faith in 2024? I think for most of us, if we make New Year's resolutions, we know that they won't last throughout the whole year. You see, we could go into 2024 with this desire. Yes, I'm going to make sure I have more faith. I am determined to have more faith. And that's not a bad thing to have a New Year's resolution along those lines. But along the way, there will be failure. There will be disappointment. Let me put it to you that actually, as we go into 2024, know this, that God is for you, that he wants you to have more faith, that he understands our failures and our shortcomings, and his desire is for you. His desire is for you to have faith, but to know that his grace is sufficient, that you are not rebuked if you fail. And that the God of grace, who came to us in the person of Jesus, offers you that faithful life, that situation where the storms rise, that he will be with you, he will walk with you, he will be in the boat with you, whether the storm gets calmed or whether it carries on for a time. He is always with you. That's the message for 2024. Just to end, I just want to pick up one last phrase because it rings a bell with me, and it was really the beginning of the thoughts that led to thinking about this story. And it comes from a different story, and I won't go into what that story is, but it's a story in the Bible, in the Gospels, where Jesus is interacting with somebody who needs faith. And Jesus is asking him about, does he believe? Does he believe? And he says this, I do believe. Lord, help me to overcome my unbelief. I do believe. Lord, help me to overcome my unbelief. And I know for myself, I hold these two things together. I do believe. I can sing on Sunday the words of these songs, and my heart's desire is to sing his praise and walk his way. But then I have to live my life. And I don't always follow that through. I don't always have that same sense of trust as I work through my life. Jesus knows this. God knows this. He loves you despite it. And he encourages you to hold on to him and have faith, to turn your face towards him in 2024 and let him bless you. Thank you to my excellent actors and for bringing us through the storm eventually, Jonathan. I should also thank Jesus.